We know that on Shavuos, we read the book of Ruth. And exactly why we do that will become clear as we go through the book. But we have a number of weeks left toward Shavuos. And as a matter of fact, we're going to start by counting the Omer tonight. Last night was 26 days in the Omer. Just stand and count the Omer if you like. You can join me as well. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, asher kidshanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu al sfirat haOmer hayom shiva ve'esrim yom shehem shlosha shavuot v'shisha yamim laOmer. Today is 27 days, which are 3 weeks and 6 days to the Omer. So that gives us, with 27 days out, we've got a little time left. We've got four Tuesday nights left to study the Book of Ruth. Four chapters, 4 weeks. So let's get going. I'm going to share the screen with you, and we'll get started. The Book of Ruth. All right. So the first chapter. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through verse by verse, and I'm going to ask questions. The verses, Hebrew, the English, and the and for that matter, the questions are right here on our page, and I welcome people to chime in to get involved or not as you wish. The Book of Ruth is written in such, it's so literarily fascinating, very similar to the Book of Samuel in that way. The number of literary devices being used, they're very naked, they're very out there for everyone to see. It's really, really remarkable. I'm going to share with you tonight the thoughts of two wonderful scholars, Yael Ziegler, a young, well, about my age, but I don't know how young she is, but a scholar at Yeshivat Har Etzion in Israel, really a wonderful scholar, wrote a book on Ruth and other books of Tanakh, outstanding literary work. And also Uriel Simon is a really old timer. He was one of the great scholars, happens to be Orthodox Jew, and one of the great scholars at, I believe, at Hebrew University for many, many years. And so my thoughts are completely from those two great scholars, in addition to things I've thought of and learned over the years. So let's get started. So you have, I'll read a free translation from the Hebrew. You'll see it in English as well. It wasn't the days of the judging of the judges. Or it could be the judging of the judges. Now there's a period called the Judges, Book of Judges. And the rabbis try to figure out, you know, when exactly was this? Was this after the Great Civil War, where someone was instead of taking someone into their house, this woman was raped, and then there was a civil war between the people who perpetrated the rape and the rest of the country, again, Benjamin against the rest of the country, total chaos broke out, or was it an earlier period, Ivtsan, maybe Boaz is Ivtsan, maybe Boaz is one of the minor judges at the beginning of the period of judges, but the period of judges is purely a period of no leadership. They're just, every now and then there's a flash in the pan, there's Devorah, there's Samson, but even those leaders, great lacking in many ways, Devorah being a notable exception, others very lacking in their leadership. The rabbis say that this expression, Shvot HaShoftim, means the judging of the judges, that during this period, I'm just going to mute everybody, there's some noise coming out, 1 second. Okay, during this period, people were judging the judges. That somehow the judge wasn't able to judge properly. Even people were judging the judges. There was a famine. Now this is very common in Genesis. There were a lot of famines. And Vayelech Ish, a man went. This is very similar to the language we use regarding Moses' father. A man went and he married a woman. Vayelech Ish, it's kind of dramatic. A man went from Beit Lechem Yehuda. From the house of Lechem. What does Lechem mean?
Bread.
Bread. He went from the house of bread. Beit Lechem is the name of a city, but it also means house of bread. He left Israel, the house of bread, and he went, like Rubis de Moab, he went to the Moabites. Anybody looks at the geography and topography of Moabites, of Jordan today, it's very rocky. It's not logical someone would go from Israel to Jordan in order to find water or pasture or anything else. So it's very strange someone would go to Moab. A man went from Beit Lechem to Moab, the fields of Moab. Field? Isn't he going to a city? Who v'ishto v'shnei banav? He and his wife and his two children. And how this is broken up is significant, because when a man makes a decision, you could say in those days, in these days, when a man makes a decision, does that implicate the wife and children? Or not? No. The husband made the decision, and he and his wife and the two children, they also showed up. But it's not their fault. What would be their fault? Now, here are the two schools. There are two possible sins in what this man did. Can anyone think of what they might be?
He left during a famine instead of staying to help.
Okay, good. So what is a moral sin? And what would be a more technical sin?
He went to a town that, because of where it was at, it was probably known for sin, and he took his family to a place that wasn't as healthy.
Okay, now, right, so the influence, what do we know about Moab? So we know about Moab is that they come from Lot. Lot had moved to Sodom. So there's a question, if Lot moved to Sodom, like Sodom and Gomorrah, then can we assume that Lot is sort of Sodom-like or not? That's the question. What else do we know about Sodom? Very immoral. They're, as far as women and homosexuality, all kinds of things, very immoral. They wanted to rape the men who came. He said, no, rape my daughters instead. I mean, very, very strange place. Plus, they're not hospitable. The reason you're not allowed to marry a Moabite, which raises questions about this whole book, is that they did not bring you water and food when you came out of Egypt. They didn't bring you water and food. So they're not hospitable. This whole book is ostensibly about the hospitality of Boaz to Ruth, and they went to a place that's known for lack of hospitality. Why would you go to a place that's very arid, that's very rocky, that's it's an enemy, it's not known for hospitality? And in addition, there was a period in the judges' period where the Moabites were in charge. If you look at the story of Eglon, the big fat king who was stabbed in his stomach by Ehud ben Gera, he was lording over the Jews. He went to live with the enemy. Maybe a national crime that he has left the Jewish people and gone to live with the enemy. We have to keep that in mind as Naomi comes home. She's not only coming home with a Gentile, she's coming home with the enemy. Keep in mind. Let's see. Let's see the questions here. If we reach them, is Moab a place to go? What is Moab known for? What is Beit Lechem in Hebrew? A place of bread. What is Judah known for? See, Michelle mentioned that how could he leave during a famine? Oh, what do you mean? If I'm starving, I leave. Yeah, but what if you're important? What if you're from the tribe of Judah? Jacob said that the staff of leadership should never leave Judah. That's what Jacob said. So, staff of leadership was never supposed to leave Judah. So then here's a man from Judah who's supposed to be the leader. And what do we find? We find that he left. He left. So it's a crime of abandoning people during a time when they expected you to be some sort of a leader. Who made that decision? Who's guilty? We'll find out in a minute. Now, Shem Ha'ish Elimelech. Now, finally, second verse, the name of the man. The name of the man was Elimelech. And his wife. His wife is Naomi. And the name of the two sons, Machlon and Kilion. Ephratim. They came from the area of Ephrat, somewhere near Beit Lechem. From Beit Lechem. Vayavos de'moav ayusham. So they went there and they were there. You see, it said before that Lagur, they went to sojourn. Were they going temporarily? Were they going permanently? Now they are. They are there. They remain there. You know, it's one thing to leave in time of famine, but it's another to stay there. So, these are all questions. Now, the names in this book are fascinating. There's no way that these names don't mean something. Either you can say that it's divine intervention that the story happened to take place with names that are so fitting to their character, or that the author kind of craftily changed their names a little bit to fit with the story, or that really they have different names and we're just calling them this because of crafty purposes. But Eli Melech means that I am the king, or God is my king. and it may imply a certain haughtiness or a certain high stature. Naomi means pleasant, and yet her life is so unpleasant. Later she says her name should be Bitter. Sons who are going to die, I'm sorry to give away the story, are named sickness and destruction. Machlon and Kilia. Machlon is sick. Kilia is by Chulu HaShemayim, the heaven stopped. Destruction, devastation. How would anyone name their children these things? Are these fictitious names? Some say, wait, Yishmael had a daughter named Machlat. He wasn't calling her destruction. Machlat could mean mechila, forgiveness. It could also mean machol, dancing. So there are other possibilities. But in any event, the names here are very significant. The one name we're going to find is harder to interpret is a surprising name. We'll get to that later. So the husband died. He's the man of Naomi, and she's left with her two sons. Is she supposed to leave now? If it was his crime that he went there, is she supposed to leave? Are the sons keeping her there? We'll find out. Why did he die? So a lot of readers would say, what? Why did he die?
We don't have a story if he lives.
Right.
Weren't they both married to Moabites?
Not yet. No, nobody. Oh, oh. Nobody.
Hadn't happened yet. No, okay.
So we said before. Michelle said before. He shouldn't have left. Or we didn't mention another incident. Some say technically you don't leave Israel, right? Sorry to say that for those of us living in America, but he says you don't leave Israel. Uriel Simon, a great scholar, he says, I don't know why they died. It doesn't say. Yael Ziegler says, look, probably either because he was a bad leader, he left in the middle of a famine, he didn't want to feed anybody. He didn't want to have to do, he didn't want anybody's help. He didn't need help. He wasn't going to a place that had food. He brought his own food. He had plenty of food. The rabbis say he just didn't want to share it with other people. He's like the Sodomites. However, Uriel Simon says, I don't know, it doesn't say why he died, but he died. And she's left with two sons. Who's the main character here so far? Naomi. And the big question in this book and for this chapter is, who's the star of the show? Is it Naomi or is it Ruth? Of course, we haven't met Ruth yet. We'll give her a chance. Now, Vayisulam Nashim. After the father died, they married women for themselves. That may imply that who didn't they ask? Their mother, possibly. Why do they marry after the father died?
Maybe he didn't approve of who they were marrying.
Right. Maybe they wouldn't have done it before he died. One name was Orpah, which means neck, like the stiff-necked people. Amkshe Oref. So it's very coincidental. Later, she's going to turn her back and leave. So again, and the other one is Ruth. Now, the word Ruth has no specific meaning in Hebrew. So it's a big problem. Every name is so beautiful. And the one who we named the book after, we don't know what it is, her name means. If she's the star of the show, what does her name mean? Some people suggest that it comes from the word Raveh, like Hosi Ravaya, my cup overfloweth. Some suggest that it's really like the word Re'ut. Re'ut means friendship. And that would be a wonderful name. The name of the book is friendship. But Re'ut is with an ayin. Re'ut is really supposed to be pronounced Re'ut. So how could Re'ut come root? So some say that in some communities, the ayin was not pronounced, and Re'ut could become root. And her name means friendship. She is Mrs. or Ms. Friendship. And they stayed there for 10 years. Very significant. In halakhic literature, if you stay 10 years without children, to grounds for divorce. 10 years is a long time to remain in one place, to remain in a place where you shouldn't be. It's a long time for the famine to go on. So what's going on? Now, big question. Did they convert? I don't know, right? Naomi never says to them, look, you're not Jewish anyway, get lost. What is the connotation of they're not converting, yes converting? How does this remind us of Lot? So Lot also left, right? They're the daughters They're, right? This whole story, these girls want to come with this Jewish woman. Well, Lot also went with Abraham. So Lot is lurking in the background there. Lot is from Moab. Lot, right? Ruth is like Abraham. She's going to go to Israel. Lot is, so there's a lot of Lot flying around here. They live there. What does that mean? And we talked about why they married at that point. And what is Naomi's role in all this? Should she have protested that they married these people? Did she have a choice? They married for themselves. Did they convert? Lots of questions. Now, it says in the Torah very explicitly, you're not supposed to marry a Moabite. And this could be their crime. And that could be the next verse, they died because you're not supposed to marry Moabites. And now she's left the woman, that's the star of the show, Naomi, the book of Naomi. She's left from bereft of her two children and from her husband. So they may have died because they went against the Torah. But isn't this whole book about how they marry Ruth and she's the mother of David? So how did that happen? So the rabbis interpret, you're not allowed to marry a Moabite, but a Moabitess you can marry. A Moabite woman you can marry. Because after all, who failed to give us food in the desert? The Moabites. The women are going to come out with water to greet the men. It wasn't their job. The soldiers were supposed to give us water. They didn't. So, so at the end of the book, we say that you're allowed to marry a Moabite. Some suggest that at the end of the book, we said you could marry a Moabite. At this point in the book, you weren't supposed to marry a Moabite. And this gets to a very radical conclusion, which my big rabbi, Rabbi Schechter at YU, claimed that this is how it works. When the rabbis make an interpretation of a verse, and it's a serious interpretation, not just to give a speech on Shabbos, but a serious interpretation for the Talmud, that's serious. And from then on, that's the law. And you know what? Before that, it wasn't the law. When these two guys married, Machlon and Kilion married Orpah and Ruth, it was against the Torah law. It says right there, you can't marry a Moabite. Later, it was interpreted, when Ruth came back, it was interpreted that you could marry a Moabite woman, and then it was permitted. This makes it seem very strange, because the Torah changed. No, the Torah doesn't change. But interpretations are added. I can't do that. I don't have the power to make a new interpretation that changes the Torah. But the rabbis and the Talmud had the tools through the methods through which the Torah is interpreted, the Midrashic methods, to actually make new laws. It's a very, very radical kind of an idea. But this is what it says, and that's what's going on. Now, so at this point, it's a tragedy. You walked in, you were hoping to hear a beautiful, touching story of Ruth, and actually, until now, it's a tragic story. It's a woman who had to leave her community. She goes there hoping for a better life. She loses her husband. She loses her two children. And all she's left with is these Gentile daughters-in-law. And at this point, we don't know how she feels about them. So he and she and her daughters-in-law, Kala, your Kala is your daughter-in-law. Your Chasan is your son-in-law. They went back. Tshuva, what is tshuva? To return. They returned from Moab. Can the daughters of Ruth, can Naomi's daughters-in-law return to Israel? Is it possible for a Moabite woman to return to Israel?
Well, technically they were widows.
Yeah, but can they return? Can we, if they go back to Israel, will they have returned to Israel? Who can return to Israel?
People that were there before. You can't return to somewhere where you haven't been.
Okay. Correct. So okay. It's very strange that it says that she got up, Batakamhi, because she's the star, Naomi, and her daughters-in-law, and she went back. I'm sorry. In this case, it says she went back from Moab because they can't go back because they're not from Israel. Why? So when you tell this story, sometimes you say, well, then the famine was over. She went home. It doesn't say that. Ki shama b'shtei Moab. She heard from Moab. Ki fakad Hashem Ramo. God remembered Israel to give them bread. So it was a theological thing. She had felt like God left them, and she heard that God remembered them. So she came back for theological reasons, which means she may have had a theological crisis. She may not have been so religious when she was in Moab. But now she heard God is on our side. But the daughters-in-law are coming too. And the question is, why are they coming? Now, here we're going to make, as Uriel Simon did, a distinction between manners and ethics and morality. In the Middle East, it's very nice to escort someone. It's a Jewish law. It comes from the Near East. If someone is leaving town, you have to escort them out of town. So the daughters-in-law escort her out of town. But do they really mean to come with her, or is it just a nicety of manners? So it says they left Moab. We have to see. We have to see what kind of, are they really coming with her or not? So she goes out of the place where she used to be, strange occasion, and her two daughters-in-law are with her. So it's all about her. She's leaving, and the daughters-in-law are slapping along. They're also there. And they all went on the road. So for the first time, the three are described in one collective verb. They went. It's one in Hebrew, it's one word, but Telachna. Lashuv el Eretz Yudah. They all went to go back to Judah. We'll borrow a little bit from family systems theory. In family systems theory, the different members of the family sort of sometimes are not differentiated. They become like one. And they're all going back. If Naomi's going back, they're also going back. They feel like they're going back. They're like, oh, you know, my mother-in-law, she always wanted to go back, and now we're going back. It's so wonderful we're going back. They're not going back. They're going there for the first time. It's a new trip. But they feel like they're going back. So they're identifying. It's not just out of manners. So they continue with her. Go back. Now, what's the play on words here?
Return.
Right. We said that they were starting to think like her. They're going home to Israel. She said to him, go back. What does she mean? To?
Go back to Moab.
To go to Moab.
Yeah.
Go back to Moab. That's where you belong.
Oh.
Shall we? And she has an interesting literary twist. She says, Isha, each woman, labeit ima, go back to your mothers. In other words, you think I'm your mother. You call me mom or something. It doesn't say that here, but we'll see later. She calls him daughter. Sometimes the daughter-in-law acts like a daughter. He says, no, let me remind you something. You have your own mothers. Go back to your mothers.
So at this point, they had not converted?
That's a big question. It's a big question. Some say that in biblical, simple biblical readings, nobody ever converts. Rabbis don't read it that way. They think everybody who marries a Jew in the Torah converts. So that's one general question. And then over here, we're going to keep looking and investigating as we go through this chapter. When did they convert? Did they convert? We'll see.
Okay.
Now, go back, meaning your real place of origin is Moab. Don't start thinking like me. Israel is not your return place. Mm. Don't forget. They could argue that going to Israel is a return because it's in their genes. Why?
Because of love.
Correct. Now she starts to pray for them. Now, around here in the hospital circles, you know, I'll pray for you. It's not always very sincere. Someone's praying for someone could be very sincere. It could also be, you know, there's a southern thing where you just, oh, I'll pray for you.
Ooh. Ooh, man.
It could be sincere. It could be not sincere. Yas Hashem lechem chesed. May God do kindness for you. Kasher asitem v'maitim v'meti. Just like you did kindness for the dead people, my husband, maybe they were good daughters-in-law, your husbands, and with me. She admits they've always been good daughters-in-law. They've been good wives. Maybe they've been good daughters-in-law to her husband. And here we have the only discussion of their husbands. There's a big question here. Are they going with her because they love their husbands. They're trying to hold on to a vestige of their husbands who's dead. Or are they going with her because they love Naomi? Did a new love story develop here between the daughters-in-law and Naomi, not the sons-in-law? As a matter of fact, my whole life, I always struggled to remember who was married to Ruth. Was it Mahlon or Kilion? Illness or destruction? Which one was married to Ruth?
And then Mahlon?
Which one?
Mahlon?
Correct. But you have to be a little bit of a geek to know that. And then I realized it's not my fault. The text, Yael Ziegler said, they're presented as twiddly dough and twiddly dung. Mahlon and Kilion. Death and destruction. Illness and destruction. It doesn't really matter. There's no personality there. There's nothing. They're just like Eldad Umeidad. They're just a couple. They're just these two evil people who they fly across the screen and they fly out. Extras. And here they come up again. Like, yeah, the dead people. You were very nice to the dead people. That's your kindness with you, like you did with those dead people. But we don't have a sense. But you know, we have a slight sense that they were very loving and kind to their husband. Anyway, she's not done. Another blessing. Yitena Hashem lachem. May God give you, with some of Menucha, find rest. Isha be'isha. Each woman with her man. You see, as a mother-in-law of deceased children, very possible, how would she feel about her daughters-in-law marrying? If she's a nice mother-in-law, she'll want them to remarry. But if she's a loving mother of her children who are dead, she might want them not to marry. She can't take it. It's hard. So she seems to be doing something very altruistic. She says, please, go back each one to their man. Find the man. Please, go home and get a man. Isha, bait Isha. Each one, find a husband. Now, again, there are two views of Naomi. Yael Ziegler believes that there's a sort of a cynical view of Naomi. There's a complex view of Naomi. And that's why it's hard to call it the Book of Naomi, because it's hard to know who she is. You could say that Naomi is this very altruistic woman who despite the fact that inside her heart she'd like the women to remain unmarried forever to remember their husbands,
nice,
makes a sacrifice to say, no, go find a life, get a life. Or she could basically be saying, bug off. I really, really don't want you coming home with me. You know why? Well, let's get nasty. Why does she not want them to come home with her?
They are Moabite, and in Israel, that might not be accepted.
And as one of the rabbis I was speaking, I heard, he said, not only are they Gentile, not only are the Moabites you're not supposed to marry, but they're also, what do we say?
Widows?
The enemy. The enemy.
Yeah.
They oppressed the Jews for a certain period of time during this period, whether it was exactly now or whether it was 100 years ago. Memory is always long when it comes to enemies. They're the enemy. And she does not want to come home with them. So there's, you know, is this petty Naomi who doesn't want to be seen with these people? Is it gracious Naomi who says, go ahead, get married? Is this incredibly loving Naomi who's thinking about them when she should be thinking about herself? Hard to know. That's the question of this book, the Book of Naomi. I don't know. Any thoughts from the audience? Do you think, can you sense whether someone's sincere or not? How do you determine that?
You mean as far as what was Naomi's, what do we think Naomi's intentions were?
That's right.
I think she was just trying to, they're young, you're going to remarry, you'll be more likely to remarry here in your home country. She knows going to Israel is going to be more of a hardship for them, and then on top of it being widowed, that's its own status in some places. So I think she meant well.
Okay.
Was she trying to protect them from ridicule when they got to Israel?
Could be. Like, you know, sometimes you know the racist remarks that other people make, so you don't want to, you know, expose your friends to that kind of thing, you know? So maybe you don't want to get involved in that, right? So it's possible. So it's hard to know. We're going to continue that question. It's going to come up again. So they said to her, there's a missing word. No. We're going to come back with you. Nashuv. We're going to go back. Don't tell us to go back to Moab. We're going back to Israel. Atomer Nami. So she has to make a new argument. It's a very long, for a biblical narrative, it's a very long discussion. Shov Navnotai. Again, she says, no, go back that way. Why should you come with me? And here she makes an assumption. Assumption is the only reason they want to come back is because she holds their future. In the ancient Near East, who is a widow supposed to marry? The wife, she's supposed to marry her old brother-in-law.
Yeah.
So we have to wait for now. We have children. And in 15, 20 years, we'll marry the brother-in-law.
Please.
That's ridiculous. Like Michelle was saying, that's ridiculous. Why should you come with me? Do I have any more children in my stomach? In my innards? They're going to be your husband? Go back. Again, go back, go back. I'm too old to have a man. Even if you want to say, and by the way, she may only be, 40, 50. So you say, look, you might say maybe there is hope. Okay? And here hope is very biologically determined. Even if I slept with someone right now, tonight, and even if I happen to give birth to children, how many children does she have to have in order to solve the problem?
Two more sons.
Two sons. Not two daughters. Not a son and a daughter. Just have two sons. Twins. Even if I happen to have twins tonight. Alain Saberna. Are you going to wait for them? Asher Yigdalu. Until they grow up? Alain Tagena. Are you going to be chained? You ever hear of Aguna? A chained woman? Be chained to me? Not to be with a man? And that has many kinds.
Stealing the cradle. Robbing the cradle.
Right? Albinotai. No, my daughters. And here she calls them my daughters. So on the one hand, they're getting closer. She realizes that the daughters are pretty serious about this. So she calls them my daughters, even though before she told her, go back to your mother, your real mother. She says, no, you're my daughters. Ki marlim me'od mikem. Loaded expression. Does it mean, the kind reading is, I am more bitter, maror, I am more bitter than you. I get one in particular translation here. Stay with me. I am more bitter than you, meaning you think you want to empathize with me and you want to say, my mother-in-law is miserable, family systems, we're all enmeshed in this tragedy. Everybody died, everybody's dying, there's no hope. You're leaving, we'll leave with you. It's a crazy plan, but we'll join you because everything's terrible. He says, no, no, no. My situation is much more bitter than yours. I'm an old lady, I have no hope. I'm going to go home and I don't know, I'll die there. But you can get married. Go home and get married. We're not in the same situation. My situation is more bitter than yours. That's a very empathic statement. Second possibility. I am very bitter because of you. Not more than you, because of you. What is she saying?
Whoa.
What is she saying?
Bitterness is from you.
What's from you? Sorry?
Bitterness.
Bitterness came from you. You know what? You know why everybody died? You know, everyone, we're sitting in the COVID era, right? So everyone, every preacher is trying to give a speech, why this happened, right? So, every preacher says you shouldn't say why it happened, right? But people say stuff, people say dumb stuff. So she says, he says, you know why my life is so bitter? Because of you.
Oh, because her sons died,
sons died. So it's possible that she let that slip. Or if she really is trying to get rid of them, that would be a great way to get rid of them. She says, look, I have enough trouble from you. You're looking to go with me more? All the time I'm spending with you, everything falls apart. But then she says something very self-reflective. The hand of God has come against me. She didn't say against her husband. She didn't say against her children. This story is the story of the tragic story of Naomi. It's the book of Naomi. It's the perspective of Naomi. The women are trying to get into her perspective. She says, you have your own perspective. You have future of a future. I have no hope, and God is against me. Although she acknowledged that God remembered her people to give them bread. So there's some hope there, but there's a little bit of lack of hope. So why does Naomi think they want to come with her?
Hoping for any chance that they might be able to remarry.
Remarry through her.
Yeah.
And what feeling does Naomi have? How would you describe her feelings?
She was bitter.
Bitter, good. What else? We're going to see that later.
Maybe she didn't feel like she had fate. Any hope?
Faith? Hope.
Hope.
Hopeless. She feels hopeless. So here's a book that's going to give us hope. So right now it's hopeless. So someone pointed out the wonderful literary tool. You start the book with tragedy, and you continue with hopelessness. And then on that basis, to this week's chapter, we're going to build hope. We're going to build hope. Atisena kolan, ativ kenaod, ishakar polach amotav, verut avkava. Another beautiful moment. So they cried again. They already cried. They cried again. They lifted their voices again. And then Orpah kisses her in one of these kisses that's not a kiss of love, but a kiss of farewell, which is like, all right, no. Kiss you goodbye. And her name is Orpah. After all, she turns her back. Verut davkaba. And Ruth clung to her. Two things. The rabbis throw the book at Orpah. Whoa, they say she is the most licentious Moabite, Sodomite kind of woman.
Ooh.
She goes back to idolatry. She goes back to harlotry. She is the worst. Modern readers say, what are you giving such a hard time for? She passed two of the three tests. She almost made it. You know, she almost came. If it wasn't such a long speech, she would have sort of come. So it's a very interesting question. The rabbis tend to sort of make the characters very extreme, and one might avoid that.
Wasn't it one of her descendants that eventually had Haman?
Not Haman, but...
No.
She had somebody
Goliath. The rabbis say that Ruth and Orpah are descendants of that Moabite king who oppressed the Jews, but who stood up to hear the word of God from the prophet, from the leader of Israel, Ehud. And in merit of that, he had two daughters. One became the mother of Goliath, and one became the mother of David. And David slew Goliath. I have a video about that. David was slaying the bad part of Lot.
Okay.
Saving the good part of Lot. Okay. So anyway, Ruth clung to her. Clinging is a very hard, very strong word. We find that word. Who knows by biblical reference? Where are you supposed to cling? Who's supposed to cling to whom?
Well,
are we supposed to cling to the Torah?
Definitely, but I don't know. My soul clings to you. I think in the Psalms you might have that. My soul clings to you. Good.
Okay.
To Hashem.
Supposed to cling to God, right? But Davak Tabo, you're supposed to cling with God. And you're supposed to cling to your... Come on. Where's your good...
Mother.
Children.
It's your wife.
Husband. The wife that has
two she's clinging to her like a husband. The real love story in this book is not going to be that Ruth and her would-be and her husband. The real love story here is the story of Ruth and Naomi. And she clung to her. Again, in family systems, she is identifying with her to a very strong degree. The extent that she's like part of her, she's clinging to her. There's no difference between the two of them. She's going to, and she'll describe that with words in just a moment. She clung to her. Now, Naomi is very determined. She already discouraged him once. She discouraged him twice. And now she's discouraging her a third time. Atonement. Now, in order to discourage her, she's going to have to throw some more zingers in there. Like, remember the last one about, right, that I'm so bitter because of you. She's going to have to throw a zinger in, otherwise, to try to break up this relationship. your sister-in-law, you see, behold, she's leaving. She's going back, going back, going back. The whole book is about going back. El Ama, to her nation, and El Elohe, to her God, or gods. Go back with your sister-in-law. So the word shuv is here again, to go back, that you want to come back with me, you belong with her, you should go back to her. And number two, very strong accusation, that you should go back to your true nation and your true God. Now I ask the question again, did Ruth convert?
Sounds like it to me. She wanted to. She's about to. Yes.
Don't read ahead. Did she, until, if she tells you to go back to her God, until now, where was she?
She was a Moabite.
If she's telling her to go back to her God, that means she was following Torah, and she's okay. Telling her to go back because that won't be accepted there.
Although, right, so we have a very interesting.
She was testing her.
Right. Oh, okay, right. So on the one hand, you can't go back to your God unless you left your God. So they must have left their God. Now she's just telling you to go back. But is that nice? Do you tell someone to go back to paganism? So then Elaine says, no, she's just testing her. She doesn't want her to go back to her God. She's just testing her. So again, is this testing? Some of the modern writers, they have trouble with that. They say, testing? What is this, the halachic bezdin over here? The record, we're going to test them. You know, she's just a woman and she's a daughter-in-law. She's testing her. She could
also be looking out for her, though. She knows if this she's not sincere, when she goes back to Israel, the consequences are going to be a lot worse.
Right. When someone wants to convert, the rabbi says, why the hell do you want to be Jewish? An Orthodox rabbi.
Here we learn that you should try to dissuade them three times.
Yeah.
That's what she's doing. But again, we have to consider the possibility that she didn't want her to come with her. And that's why she wants to dissuade her. She said, go back to your gods. Go back to your people. Why would she
didn't want to be bothered, it sounds like.
Maybe. Well, perhaps. There are two sides to that. She is a woman who's alone, so it's hard to believe that she doesn't want companionship. On the other hand, it may be very humiliating going back with a Moabite, right? We don't know if anybody knows about this intermarriage. And she says, it's your God, she's going back to her nation, Amah Eloheha, her God. She's going back to her natural, true God. Now, some of you may recall, I have a unique reading of how to read the next verse. Now, the question is, how insulting was Naomi's statement? If you say, she's just being nice. She says, look, come on, just go back to your sister-in-law, you go to your nation, your gods. You know. Or no, there's a little zinger there. She's telling her, oh, yeah? You know, so I can picture the wind is blowing. And, you know, there used to be three people. Now there's just two people left. She looks her in the eye and she says, oh, yeah? Go ahead. Join her. Go back to your gods. And she says, oh, yeah? She says, don't forget, this is a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, right? It's not always peaches and cream. So she says, I'll tifki be. Don't affront me. That's don't urge me. That's possible. Don't entreat me. But it could also be don't affront me. In modern Hebrew, it means don't insult me. To leave you. To turn away from you. Like the name of my sister-in-law, turn away. So then she says, no. Wherever you go, I'm going. Wherever you sleep, I'll sleep. Says Uriel Simon, what does that mean, wherever you sleep, I'll sleep? So I always thought it had something to do with dying. Says, no. They're about to walk from Moab, from Jordan to Israel. It takes a few days. On the road, you have to sleep somewhere. When you're traveling with someone, one person says, well, I'm tired. Let's sleep here. The other one says, nah, let's walk a little more. It's a little dusty over here. Says, listen to me. You like to do it on your own? Let me tell you something. I don't care. Wherever you want to sleep, I'll sleep. When you go back to Israel, you have no place to sleep. You're going to be homeless. I don't care. I'll sleep in the field. I don't care. That's what she's saying. Amech ami. Elokai elokai. Usually we read it like this. Your God, your nation is my nation. And your God is my God. And my reading is like this. I should go back to my God? My nation? Your God is my God. Your nation is my nation. I've been living with this guy for 10 years. You think that's my God anymore? It's not my God anymore. And this relates to the question of whether she converted. She's telling her, I've been out of that faith for years. But it also shows you that Naomi is not so sure. So we have three possibilities. One, she converted to Judaism. They did convert. But one, they didn't convert. And the second, that third, they did convert, but even Naomi is not so sure if they're serious about it. And in fact, Orpah may not have been.
So is this where she confirms her conversion?
Right. So if you say that they was not converted before, so here, either this is the conversion, or this is a confirmation of the true conversion, where the first one was a bit phony. And now she says the famous words, "Asher tamuti amut," where you die, I'll die. Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out that this is important. You might say, who needs that? What do you have to throw that in for? What does that have to do with dying? Because she's talking about adopting the fate of the Jewish people. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, when you convert, you accept the faith and the fate. And there's nothing that reflects the fate more than where you're buried, right? That's the end of it all. Where you're, I'm going to be buried with you. That means the shared fate. The one comedian said, you know, till death do we part is one thing, but I have to be buried with you forever. You know, that's really, you know, asking for a lot. The idea of being buried somewhere is very meaningful. All right, Soloveitchik said that there was one of the queens of England, I think Victoria, she said, I don't mind the Jews, they're fine. But why do they have to be buried separately? And Napoleon insisted that when the Jews were accepted as citizens, that the Sanhedrin that he created decree that Jews could be buried with Gentiles. And in fact, for a few generations, rabbis were buried with Gentile cemeteries. Because they couldn't bear the idea that Jews feel like they have a different destiny. That when Abraham came to the people and he said, I want a plot for my wife. He said, sure, you can have any plot you want. He says, no, I want my own cemetery. Cemetery, what do you need that for? Because we have a different future, different destiny. So she's telling her, I want my destiny forever to be with the Jewish people. And then she swears. She swears in a positive sense. She swears to God, which is what you're supposed to do in those days. Only death will do us part. But really, not even that, because after you die, I want to be buried with you too. At that point, now when she saw she was serious, she stopped talking to her. So usually we read this like, oh, and then they hugged and they went on. Then say, El Ziegler, wait a second. That's not the most loving ending to the story. And all it says is they stopped talking. As a matter of fact, you read it the way I read it. She said, oh yeah, you want me to go back to my God? This is my God. What are you talking about? So then she says, oh, all right. She doesn't say anything. How do you deal with a difficult child, whatever?
It's not a car trip.
Abraham, sorry?
I was going to say, it's not a car trip unless someone's having an argument for 3 days.
It's not a car trip. Right. So, someone argue that it's like Abraham and Isaac. What happened? Isaac said, you know, Dad, where's the lamb? So he said, well, you know. So then they walk together. So you say they walk together. What did they say to each other? Nothing. Because they couldn't talk. Because there was tension about who's the sheep. Same thing over here. They continued together. She didn't talk to her anymore. She didn't say anything. Because she was completely stymied. Because what do you say? And especially if you take the reading, that she was kind of hoping that she wouldn't come with her. What did you do? She's going to come with me now.
Right.
And now we have to see when she comes home, are Ruth's predictions correct that she will not be welcomed properly? With Naomi's prediction. Naomi's prediction. And again, as some of you mentioned, only Naomi would know how she would be welcome because she knows the people. She knows the Nundiks. Moving along. Atelach nashtehen. Now there's a major shift. The two of them walked. What happened over here?
They're together.
The city was...
Well, we'll get to the city in a second. Just that expression, they walked. The two of them walked. That's new. You see, until now, it was Naomi and her daughters-in-law. Now, the two of them walked. It's almost like Abraham and his son. They walked together. Ad bo'ana Beit Lechem until they came to Beit Lechem. They give bo'ana Beit Lechem when they came to Beit Lechem. Atei home kalir alehem. Atom ezot nami. Instead of some sort of hero's welcome, instead of like, how you doing, what happened to your husbands, they say something that, you know, they say stuff people say. They have all these videos today, like things you shouldn't say at a shiva, things you shouldn't say at a, you know. So that's the kind of stuff they said. Is that Naomi? What? You look so old. You don't look anything like you used to look. Okay. You look like you lost your husband and two kids. What happened? Right? And everybody was tehom. It was like a confusion. Where's the chesed? Where's the kindness? We came from Moab. Moab is supposed to be people from Lot. Lot lived with the people of Sodom, who couldn't bear that somebody came to visit one night, right? And the Jews are suffering because they had a whole civil war because a girl was raped and she wasn't welcome in the community.
Mm.
And they go back to Beit Lechem, the house of bread. And what do people say? Oh, you look different. Boy, you don't look too good. Where's the hospitality? Who takes her in? Where's the great Boaz? What's going on? The rabbis say, where is Boaz? He's supposed to be related. The guy who's going to redeem everybody. Where is he? They say he just lost his wife. He's sitting shiva.
Oh,
a good excuse. What we're going to discuss next week is Boaz a great hero? Where is he? Where are the people? Where's Asta? Where did they sleep that night? They went from the field of Moab. I suspect they went to the field of Beit Lechem. They're going to sleep in the field. So Naomi wants to deflect all the things about what happened to her. She says, you're wondering what happened? I'll tell you. I'll give you all the dirt you want. Here we go. I told Marlene, she says to all these yentas, I'll take Krenalina on me. Firstly, don't call Naomi anymore. Krenalina Mara. Call me bitter. Maror. God made things very bitter. The name of God she uses is the name of Shaddai. Shaddai may have something to do with fertility. The God of fertility knocked me out. I don't have any fertility. I got nothing. I got no kids. I got nothing. Very much. Anim le'ah lachti. I went out full. The rabbis say she was pregnant when she left. So she had lost three kids. Rekama shivani Hashem. I came back empty. Empty, empty-handed, no money, no husband, no support, empty feeling. But she's very religious. God did everything. God brought me back. Brought me back. The same word again. How many times have we had this? If you count it up, it should be like 10 times. It's krenali na'ami. These are all literary devices. Repeat the same word. Call me Naomi. You know why? I'm going to change the meaning of Naomi. Hashem, why should you call me Naomi? Hashem Anabi. God testified against me. Or he dealt harshly with me. He either afflicted her or he testified against her. What would he testify? What would he testify? What did she do?
We don't know if she said anything against her husband when he decided to leave without helping. We don't know if she said anything when her son's married. Did she put up enough of a fight? Did she just bite her lip and stand by and let it happen? And only she knows that.
Now, all this is a great backdrop to next week, because can these women who, let's say, classically in their societal roles would tend to be very passive, can they assume an active role in redeeming themselves, or are they going to sit and wait for Mr. Charming, Mr. Handsome and Charming, to come and save them? So this is going to be a very important question. The question of their passivity in the past and their passivity in the future, their activism in the future. Good. So, Atashov Naomi Virut Hamoavia Kalata Ima. Again, the text is very crafty about, now it doesn't say they went back together. It says Naomi went back. Singular, and Ruth the Moabite. Why do we want to mention that? Isn't that not nice? Aren't you not supposed to mention someone's origins when she comes back? What? And all of a sudden, you're calling him a Moabite. What's going on? Right? Why is she more Moabite now all of a sudden?
Because she's the only one there.
Right.
So she kind of stands out.
Right. She's going to be Ruth the Moabite for a while. Kalata, her daughter-in-law. So she's still her daughter-in-law. Again, whether the first marriage was valid, not valid, she's her daughter-in-law. Ima with her. that with the togetherness. It's a perfunctory word, but here I think it may have more meaning. She's with her. Hashava mistei Moab. Who came back? Who returned? Well, we already said Naomi came back. Now we're saying that Ruth came back too. She's also coming back. She's as identification of one personality with the other, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. The two of them, they, singular, collective pronoun, they came to the house of bread, just the beginning of the barley harvest. That's the time of Pesach, when we bring the barley. We've talked about the Omer before. Tonight's 27 days of the Omer. It's the beginning of the season. There's going to be another season of wheat. First barley, then wheat. It's the early grain, the late grain. So we're just at the beginning. There's a lot to be, the story has a lot yet to come. And here's where the official chapter makers chopped it and said, here, stop here. That's where we'll stop for tonight.
Is this where she first calls her Ima?
Oh, no, that's not that Ima. That's Ima with an ayin. Good try. But Ima. Interesting. Yeah, there could be a pun between go back to your mother's, and then she went back with her, which in Hebrew, Ima, with her mother. Yeah, I hesitate to do it because, you know, two words are different. One is with an ayin, and one is with an aleph. But it's possible that there's a pun here. It is a very crafty book. And it's possible that she went back with her daughter-in-law, her mother. Yeah, it doesn't really fit in the words, but there may be an echo of her mother. Could be that he should become like her mother. What relationship do they have? Is it like a mother? Is it like a daughter? Is it like a friend? The word Ruth, Reut, perhaps. So we have the harbinger of something big. So notice what happened in this chapter. It was the beginning. It was Elimelech. He's the man. The other people just, you know, they come along with him. And then he dies. But then Ruth, Naomi seems not to play that much role. Her sons just do whatever they want to do. But then they're gone. And now it's all about how she is bereft of her husband and her daughter. And she decides to leave. And the other people just come with her. They're just schlepping along. And then one leaves. And then the two of them come. And now they're together. And then Ruth becomes very active. Ruth becomes a big speaker. She makes a big speech from biblical terms. She gave a long speech, like the longest speech you can imagine. Biblical terms, you don't get more than one or two sentences to speak. And have we transitioned now from the book of Naomi to the book of Ruth? Or does Naomi continue to be the main character? Whose problem are we trying to solve now? From now on, are we trying to get a bride for Ruth? Or are we trying to solve what? What's the other possibility? Are we trying to get a husband for Ruth? Or what's the other possibility?
Get Naomi taken care of by her family?
Something like that. So to rewrite the story, the tragedy of losing your husband and son, can we rewrite that and change the past and change the future? So that's it. Now, if we ask, why do we read this on Shavuos? What would you say based on today's reading?
It happened on Shavuos.
Well, it's now it's still the days of the barley harvest. But later we're going to have the days of the... It happened during the Omer. Is that correct? Good.
Yeah, they were starving, weren't they? There was a famine, right? They'd come from a famine or something like that.
Yes. What has that got to do with Shavuos?
Shavuos? Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure somebody can figure it out. I don't know.
What do you say? Why would you read this book on Shavuos?
We got the Torah on Shavuos, and she clings to the Torah. She clings.
Someone asked me the other day. A little boy asked me. I got a text from my father. Where does it say that you convert to Judaism with mikveh and all these things? So I said, well, we convert the way they did at Sinai. Sinai, they wash their clothes. We go to the mikveh. Sinai, they said they accept the Torah. We'll do it. So you have to accept the Torah. And at Sinai, in Egypt, they had a bris before they ate the Paschal lamb.
They did.
The boy has to have a bris, yeah. So we get it from there. So Sinai is a conversion of the Jewish people. So it's a book of conversion. Maybe. Is that what the book is about? That's one of our tasks. What's the book about? Next week, we're going to find out The focus next week is, we'll continue to raise the question, is it a book of Naomi, a book of Ruth? We also want to know, is Boaz a hero or a villain? So we'll see next week. Ruth's husband, is he a hero or a villain? Find out next week. Any event, I welcome comments, questions, greetings, anything. I open the floor.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, thanks, Ernie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Harry. Thanks for joining us. So, what do you say? Phil, any comments?
Oh, it was very good. Thank you very much.
Good thing.
I asked you at the wrong time, was Ruth a beautiful woman? And now I don't remember
right.
The
Now I can ask the question, right? Charlie once asked that at the wrong time. People thought she was talking about someone else. Yes, it's a fascinating thing. Usually when you have a love story or something about a woman, all the Jewish stories, it's always beautiful, right?
Especially Rachel in Hollywood, yeah.
And Sarah was beautiful. And, you know, in this story, looks don't seem to play a role.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Okay.
It's really about character.
Okay.
It's about character. They're attracted to Ruth is a very attractive woman from a character point of view.
Okay. Beauty is vain and charm is deceitful or something like that.
Right. That's right.
That's
Malcolm,
all.
Malcolm, have any comments, Malcolm? Timna? Madeline?
Okay. Shkoyach. Everybody right. Have a marvelous evening.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
much. Thank you
very good.
All right. It should all be for the memory of Mary Tumont. Be well, everybody. Take care. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
See God willing next week. Okay. Take care.